I would like to first of all look at the goal of discipline as a way to think through what are profitable questions to ask that get the job done. Because if we don't understand the goal of discipline, to create a framework, obviously our questions are going to be shaped accordingly. So I have four things here, and then we're going to just flesh them out a little differently after that, and then we'll get into the asking of questions. So the goal of discipline, number one, letter A, is to stop the action. Now that sounds pretty harsh, but that is the goal of discipline, is to get the action stopped that is offensive. That is one of the goals. Secondly, to show the consequences of wrong behavior. To show the consequences of wrong behavior. You know, really, we want to teach our students something about life here. Some of this has a lot to do with our personality that we got to think about in relation to discipline and this consequence, this, they're going to pay for this. Some of us have personalities that when a student does something wrong, we take it very personal. And we want them to kind of pay for it because there's a personal component here. Some of us have a personality that don't like to cause any amount of pain. And so we tend to be very easy on people. And we hate to bring consequences to what happened. You know, we'd rather just sort of, you won't do this again, will you? And it'll be, you know, you've learned your lesson, right? And of course, in the office, they can nod their head, big alligator tears. And you're sure you got your job done. You got them on your side. Well, let's keep going. We'll come back to that maybe a little bit. Letter C is to clear the conscience. To clear the conscience. In discipline and in not just talking about the problem, but in bringing consequences, there is a certain clearing that the child does need. See, a lot of the teachers here are not parents. Some of you are. But as you move along in life with working with children, I hope you come to appreciate that and understand that. There is a certain guilt that that child feels for what they have done. That while they don't want to be disciplined, they want to be disciplined. Okay, there is obviously the side in which a child says, well, I'm glad I got free of that one. I thought I'm going to get a whipping, or I thought I'm going to get a penalty for this. Whew, boy, feels good. I mean, I got away with it. But there is a sense also then that they struggle with that, you know, I didn't really pay for this. I didn't. And I should have. And so the conscience isn't completely clear. While, of course, they're glad to escape the pain, who wouldn't be? There's also something that doesn't feel quite right about it. And I think you need to think about that. Does that mean there needs to be physical consequences every time, or recess every time, or writing 500 sentences? There are times that we instruct through simply, the discipline is that they had to be talked to, and which is quite intimidating usually. Or find a setting that is more intimidating. One teacher last year said just bringing them up to the principal's office and using my office seemed to really clip the wings right there rather than just talking in the hallway. And just kind of the setting added some weight to the conversation. So I'm not going to suggest that every time there needs to be a huge consequence, but there is that clearing that I think you need to weigh out. You need to think about, what will it take to clear the situation? We'll pick up on some of that again later. But to clear the conscience that they feel like everything is okay again is so important. Letter D, to encourage cooperation and a change of heart. The goal of discipline is to encourage cooperation. You cannot force it, but you can encourage it. Encourage cooperation and change the heart. So now let's just back away from these four things and just try to summarize them into a two-prong approach. And this has a lot to do with personality. But you cannot allow your personality to overshape your administration in your classroom. The one part of administration is getting the action to stop and dealing with it. Why is that important? Well, it's important that thing gets stopped, number one, because often it's disruptive. And you can't really function when this thing is going on. I can't anyhow. I'm not good at teaching up front. If something's going on that I don't like, it just incapacitates me. Because I'm watching everybody. Movie teachers are usually intuitive as to what's going on. And if there's just some nonsense going on, I can just hardly teach. Even if a student acts like he's not paying attention just to irritate me, I can hardly teach. I'm just kind of sit there. Every time I look at him, he just kind of acts like he's tired. It has to stop, okay, so that we can do our job. That's the one aspect. Also, so that it doesn't influence others. Because remember this. What you tolerate, you accept. Mark it down. What you tolerate, you accept. That's another reason that the action really needs to stop. Because if you have something that you're allowing in your room that really frustrates you, and you just, well, no, I don't really allow that, but, you know, I don't do anything about it. Then you do allow it. Whatever you accept, whatever you tolerate, you send signals to the rest of the students that, you know, you'll get away with it at least. And maybe you don't put your blessing on it, of course not. But there's a sense that, you know, it's probably okay. And that will spread. So if you don't deal with it, you can figure that you're going to see this coming up in either other forms or in other students. So the action needs to stop so that you can be what you need to be as a teacher and be focused, and also to keep this thing from spreading throughout the student body. Because if it's something negative, it will. An attitude, a certain conduct. If you don't want that thing to spread, you better get the thing shut down. So that's the one aspect. That's the one part of this two-prong approach, getting the thing to stop. But the other part is, and the harder part is, winning the heart of the child and the cooperation and respect. Now, is it either or? See, most of us in our administration, we tend to either or on this. Either we spend a lot of time talking and we just don't really get it done. We don't squash that thing. Because we talk and we're very relational. And we just hate to put our foot down. Maybe because we're a little scared of the students. We're a little intimidated. We do want our students to like us, don't we? Well, sure, I do too. And we're afraid that getting this thing stopped is going to cause a wave of rebellion and these nasty looks that we don't want to see. And so we talk and we encourage. Hey, you know, we just kind of let it go. And we go home and it just nags us and bugs us. But we don't want to lose that relational aspect. So we kind of err on this thing of just trying to woo them into good behavior and hope it works out okay. Or else, maybe we're more of a choleric. And so we tend to just kind of mow people rather low and just, it's got to stop. It's the end of the story. Just knock it off. Cut it out. Quit it type of a person. Kind of no nonsense. So think about where your personality is here. It probably leans a little bit one side or the other. Mine certainly does. And so think about the weaknesses that tends to bring to your administration. Probably lean part of this fork, two-prong, is longer than the other one. And we want to just think of trying to bring these things in balance because it's going to shape the questions you ask. It's going to shape how you handle every situation, whether you're obsessed with this relationship thing or else you just want the nonsense to stop and you just kind of can cut it off there. Well, it's easier probably the more experienced you are, the more you lean toward just kind of cutting it off and done with it because you want a no-nonsense classroom. It's kind of, okay, quit this and you move on. It takes time then to go back to this child and work with the problem and go through good questions and try to win the cooperation and respect of the child. That takes a lot of time. It's easiest just to, you see something happening and you just kind of, hey, that's not right. I don't want that going on. And just kind of, you develop that teacher look, you know. You know, I might want to practice that a little bit in front of the mirror. But you'll develop this certain look that does communicate, that's it. I mean, stop it. Maybe you don't have to really say a whole lot. Or you just see something happening and you just kind of shut it down. Okay, we got the action stop. But what about the time then to go back and say, now, I know I made you stop that. And it might have been a little embarrassing. I'm sorry, I didn't want to hurt you. I didn't want to make you look stupid. What was really going on? And you want to go back and think about, how can I win the heart of that child? How can I win their cooperation? How can I communicate that I wasn't angry? How can I understand maybe that there was another component to the behavior that I really ought to know? And it would cushion a little bit how I felt about it even. But that is good for us to think through that. So the goal of the discipline, trying to just lay those out, for the action to stop. We don't want it to spread. We don't want to incapacitate us as a teacher. We can hardly teach. And the other part then is to bring our students along with us and the cooperation. And think of your strengths and weaknesses in relation to that, because it will hugely affect how you deal with all these little issues that we deal with every single day at school. So we try to just keep control of things. All right. Let me just mention briefly the two sides. If you're overly strong on let's just get this thing stopped, you're asking for rebellion in your classroom, especially in middle and upper grades. Just kind of stop. You know, you'll soon be playing this cat and mouse game. And if you want to be the cat, they'll be the mouse, even though I don't think they want to. I'm convinced of that. Please get that notion out of your head, that students want to play this cat and mouse. Oh, there's one here and there's one there. But I don't think students as a whole enjoy this game of see what they can get away with and see if you can get caught. You see, if you cannot get caught, the teacher tries to catch you. And it's certain this sense of, you know, I'm popping around corners and looking, and I quickly look if I can catch somebody. And it's just this sense that I'm suspicious of you, and I'm sure you're doing something bad. It's a matter of when I can get you. Well, they'll play that, sure. I mean, I just remember embarrassing things that I would have done, even as a Bible school, because this man wanted to catch us, and he couldn't. It was ridiculous. These were older teenagers at Bible school. I mean, boy, he was obviously going to catch somebody. But so when he wasn't looking, you know, could never quite figure out who was doing what. The same group of students still remember, some of you might recognize the name of Bishop Jesse Neuenschwander. What a wonderful man he was. He would come to study hall and he would just say, okay, it's time to study. And he studied. I don't know if he ever looked up. It was no fun. I mean, if you're going to hum, he's not going to look and see anyhow if you don't know anything. He just wasn't going to play that game. Same group of students. It was just amazing to watch that thing, how people acted with different kinds of administration there. So if you have that attitude that I'm sure my students are bad, it's a matter of when I can catch them, and you carry that with you. I mean, sometimes we know situations. We're going into our next year and we've got the same students. We expect the problems. I understand that. But it's more of an attitude that you carry with you, that I'm out here to catch you. I'm the teacher. Don't hassle me. It will lead to rebellion. The other side, though, if you're too relational, it will lead to you being disdained as a teacher. It can. You know, finally, students want things to go okay in the classroom. And they don't enjoy a restless classroom. And if you don't got the backbone to deal with a problem, eventually your students look at you and they think you're weak. It's a tough dance, folks. It's a tough dance. Because, I teach older students. And I've used it happen to me multiple times where I'll hear through somebody else that the girls are kind of ticked off that I don't finally do something with that fellow. Or the boys will say, boy, if the boys would have done that, he'd have hammered us. In other words, they just feel like you're letting somebody go. And the teacher's scared of that student, and they smell that so quickly. Who you play to, who you try to keep happy all the time. And that will lead to disdain, rebellion in a different form, but I think more of just a disdain that, come on, you're the teacher, just make them quit that. Because they finally want a relaxed, disciplined classroom. They really do. Most students. All right, let's go into asking questions. Let's just for a little bit of framework. What are some destructive questions to ask? I broke this down into destructive questions, then questionable questions, because sometimes they can be asked in an okay way, and then profitable questions, just as a way, and I know it looks like a very, it's a very thin outline here. It just gives you a place to write some things down. But I want you to feel free to ask questions as well. What about asking this question to my students. Is this a bad question? And so we'll just kind of fill in some gaps as we go, because there's so many questions that are under these categories that it's more categories of questions than actual individual questions, although we'll use that as well. So what are some questions that can make a young student feel sinful before God? I'd like some help here. What might you ask a student? And it is not a good question to ask a student. It makes them feel sinful before God, and that is not your job, especially for younger students. What kind of a question? See, it's fun to ask questions. Buy some time. Yes. I wrote the same one down. Did you read my notes? Don't you know that liars go to hell? If it would be an older student, you may ask a question that would lead to that thinking about that. You know, God does really care about this. This really is a moral issue before God. Honesty. I mean, you got a 16-year-old, you got a high schooler here. It's really fairly accountable to God to help them think about that. So some of this would be very age sensitive, wouldn't it? But to a first grader, a second grader, don't you know? Liars go to hell. Really? We'll look at some of an appropriate way to maybe discuss that under another set of questions with a younger student. But just as a general statement, be very age sensitive with your question that has to do with the morality of what's happening and how God looks at this and heaven and hell questions. You know, that is adding a weight and a burden on the student that shouldn't be in their minds. And that is manipulating the child in ways that I don't think is your job as a teacher whatsoever. Any other questions that makes a person feel sinful before God? Just in general, any question that calls them into account before God, especially at a young age. So simply questions that might be, what do you think, what does God think about you? Puts a sense of God's frown on them personally, not just their behavior. So what do you think God thought about that? So that is bringing the child into account before Almighty God instead of an account in responsible or accountable to you. But when you use that kind of language, you very quickly make them think about God. Oh, God is upset at me. Again, age-sensitive question. There are okay ways to ask some of these questions, and we'll look at those later. But be careful that you don't kind of gather some weight here to really crush that student and really get this behavior stopped by bringing God's frown on top of them, and it really gets, you get some mileage out of that. The child is not emotionally or spiritually ready to handle that weight. God didn't create the little heart of a child to be able to cope with that emotion that God is in heaven and is angry at me. Or any threats of hell to that child. I think we need to be careful that we don't, in a weak moment, kind of just throw that in there. Not really intending it to be that heavy for the child, but a very sensitive child, sensitive conscience, will think about that later and could bring some fears that really are not, they're not ready for that, to understand that. What about questions that shame a student? This one maybe we do a little quicker. What kind of questions shame a student? Okay, what were you thinking? Now, is it okay to ever ask a student that? So, what were you thinking? Does it make a difference where you ask that question? I think so. In public, I think this shame thing has a lot to do with public questions. Maybe something's going on in the classroom, and you swing to that student and say, what are you trying to prove? What are you thinking? Don't you know that's stupid to be doing that? Those kind of terms we should never use, private or public. That was a stupid thing to do. That was dumb. You know, that was outright dumb of you to do that. Or asking, don't you think that was dumb? Don't you think that was a stupid thing to do? Teachers, remember, when you're talking to your students, they are scared. I mean, they should be at least. Even 9th and 10th graders, high schoolers, will be sitting there swallowing and trying desperately hard not to show any tears. And I cannot believe the tears I've seen out of big boys. Quite a few. And sometimes the kinder we are, the more they even. Because there's that emotion that, hey, I'm at least being treated respectfully. And they just, you know. A lot of pressure when a teacher talks to them one-on-one. Err on the side of gentleness, not on the side of harshness. But especially the shame thing, we do need to be careful with. Do you think this will help you grow up to be a good person? Might be something we're tempted to ask. Do you think this kind of behavior is going to help you to be a kind of man or lady that you want to be, that God wants you to be? It's kind of asking, you know, you're really, something's really wrong here. You know, whoa, you better think about this. You're really wrong here. You're really in a wrong path. Again, an older student, there are questions that you might ask that help them to think about the character that they are developing. But especially a young child, and especially with the attitude of just kind of, boy, you are really messed up here. You're really wrong. Well, what are they supposed to say? Do you think this will help you to grow up to be this? Well, of course they're going to say, no, I guess not. I mean, you're asking a question that, you know, how are they supposed to respond? But especially in public, you just think of the weight that the student feels by everybody else around them. How would you feel if I would make you look stupid? Here, you'd feel ashamed very quickly, right? Students are sensitive, especially some students who are, you know, very fragile emotionally and very just fragile socially. Very quickly, they feel very stupid. So be gentle with questions that in any way could shame the child. Some teachers have the attitude that if you act like a third grader, you get treated like a third grader. I don't agree with that. If a 10th grader acts like a third grader, I would not try to think about how a third grader would be disciplined, and then that's what that 10th grader needs to do. That brings shame. Now, if you act like a third grader, you maybe need to be told that this is certainly under what I would expect of you at your age. This is something we'd normally be dealing with in the lower grades. There may be a place to do that carefully. But the attitude that if you act like a third grader, I'm going to treat you like a third grader. You mean go stand in the corner. You know, something that's really, again, brings a lot of shame. Be very careful with that. That'll bring disrespect and rebellion so quickly. The child has a real sense of where their dignity is and how you are treating them in relation to that. I believe we need to think about us respecting the student as much as we need to think of the student respecting us. In fact, more so. Respect is a result of your respect for the students, not the other way around. You don't respect the students when they respect you. No, you respect the students, and that helps to bring out respect from the student body. Generally, of course, we know there are exceptions, and I want to acknowledge that. There are exceptions to that. But the shaming thing, how we handle situations, is a mistake that we can make very, very easily in our frustration and our determination to kind of squash something. So be careful. Any questions about that category? Yes.
Is it shaming a student to tell them to grow up or act their age, say their shoe size or whatever?
That's a category, I assume. You say what about it?
That's in that category?
I would feel so, yes. You know, it's one thing for a father to do that and say, come on, you need to grow up. But you can't get away with that too quickly in school. The question was, is it okay to say, you need to grow up or act your shoe size? Act your age? No, no, it's the other way, right? Act your age, not your shoe size, right? That's how we say it. You like to be told that? How does that feel? You know, a parent can get away with that maybe because they have a relationship that is different, or maybe it's said in fun, come on, act your age, not your shoe size. And maybe you could take a swipe across the classroom if you have a relationship that you can get away with it, okay? This depends. Some of these questions do depend on your relationship with a student and how secure you are and how well they know that you love them no matter what, even if you make a swipe at them like that. All right, come on, folks. It's act your age, not your shoe size. And you go to the basement. Come on, you're being watched. It's certainly different than zeroing in on one student and say, Are you never going to grow up? I mean, this again. Are you ever going to grow up? Do you realize how childish this is? Whew. That is shaming that student, especially if it's anything in public. So this is fairly subjective in that a lot of this does depend on your relationship with a student. I mean, understand, it really does. And the rapport you have with your student body and how you say it and the body language that goes with it. So it's not just any of the exact words that you say. All right, let's move on to questions. Questionable questions. What is the most common question teachers ask a student when they catch them doing something? What's the question? Why are you doing that? Yeah, why? Is it okay to ask a student, why are you doing something? Well, that's a pretty open-ended question, I guess, isn't it? Why are you doing something? But that is a question that I would like to talk about a little bit. What is going on in the mind of the student when you say, why did you do something? What's going through the mind of the student? What is he or she trying to do very quickly?
Make an excuse.
Make an excuse. In other words, you're inviting the child to see if they can get away with something here. That's really what you're doing. You are making a lawyer out of him or her. You're teaching them to think fast. That's good to learn to think fast in some ways, of course. But you're teaching that child to think fast as to how can I get out of this situation with the least amount of damage possible? How can I make myself look as good as possible? The answer to why they did something is almost always something you cannot work with, right? Why did you do something? Rarely results in an honest answer that you can now move to the next step of trying to deal with it. It's almost always something that you got to counter. So why ask the question to begin with? I'm afraid it teaches them to work around personal responsibility pretty quickly as they try to not lie, but sure take the pressure off of themselves and put themselves in the best light. And some students are so good at that. I mean, what a spin they can put on it. Is that finally the question? Why did you do something? Well, it is a question that you want to get to eventually, but I think you want to be in control of that discussion, not the child. You want to be in control of helping the child to understand why they did what they did do. We'll look at that more under profitable questions. But that's as you guide the discussion and you help them understand their heart. But if you're doing it and they're in control of it, as to why they did what they did, they're soon telling half-truths or totally untrue things, and you set them up for it. Now, what are you going to do? What's a very famous response to, why did you run in the basement? So why were you running? Why would you ask why they are running? Come on, they were running, and they're not supposed to be running. But that's the first thing, and I'm not quite sure what to do. I caught them, okay, I'm nervous. Why were you running in the basement? They'll probably say what? 50% of the time they'll say what?
I forgot.
Great. Now you're supposed to discipline a child, but they forgot. See, that's a way of just kind of wiping away their responsibility, because if you forget something, you're not responsible anymore, right? Well, no, not right, but they're hoping that's what you think. And so that question, I think, often sets you up for an answer that now you don't know what to do for sure. Because they forgot. There are a few students who might say, I ran in the basement because I wanted to go out for recess and I didn't think you were looking. once in a while, you'll get a good answer that you can actually administrate on their answer. But I think that's a key that you want to think about. How can you ask questions that the answer is something that is administratable then to go to the next step? Which might just be a little reprimand or a reminder. Or in some situations, obviously it might be a serious thing. But when you start certain questions, especially this why thing, you're starting to set up a tension between what their story is and what you know is a real story. And now you got to call into question their honesty, and you soon have a whole set of other issues to work with than actually what happened. Now, am I saying you should never ask why a child did something? You got to find your way. It depends who you are as a teacher. It depends who the student is. It depends what the offense was. But I think it's worth just thinking about how often that leads to unprofitable places. And the problem becomes larger when really you want to minimize the problem. Or you want to get this thing scaled down to something that we can define what happened and we can do something about it. But so often the problem grows. And at times that happens outside of what you led them to do, I realize. But we can really play this game, this honesty game with them, until you can know you're going to end up with a way bigger problem. And you may as well just not get there. I struggle with that question. You know, when do you allow them to answer the why questions and the what questions, etc., if you know they're going to lie about it? Maybe we can pick up some of that as we go. I don't know if there's other questions you want to discuss under this as far as why you did whatever, but it's the typical, why did you trip that student? Or why did you get in line quickly? Or why did you whatever? So it's just a very general, this why issue to think about when you maybe can get away with that, but often when you cannot. You might even get into things like, so why did you do this? Let's say it's a language issue. Well, why did you say that? Oh, my dad says that. Well, now you're in trouble, right? Because you ask, why did you say that? I heard you say that. Why did you say that? Well, my dad says that all the time. Is that bad? Yes. if that does happen, I suppose you would know to be very careful at least. I mean, we should be careful. Maybe just saying, well, you know what? What your dad says at home obviously isn't my problem. It has nothing to do with school. Don't say even it's not my problem, because that indicates there is a problem. But whatever your dad says at home, that's his choice. That's not at school. But here at school, I really don't want you to say that, okay? But see, right away now you kind of set up. The problem became bigger because suddenly you drew the home into it by allowing the discussion to get broader than what the problem really is. And then you're kind of dealing with secondary things. And often those are sticky things to deal with. On to the next point. Questions that lead students in endless circles and confusion. Now, it can be the why question. There are students, I think I'm convinced, who can confuse themselves. And I don't have the wisdom to know when that is happening and when it is not happening. But I can certainly think of scenarios of where we just went around and around and around, and after a while, I'm possibly confused, and they are certainly seem confused. And now we've got to sort this thing out and figure out if there's anything, any substance to what happened, or if it's even fair to discipline the child because it has gotten so muddled by just asking over and over from this angle, and then we try to trap them from this angle. And then, yes, but you said this. And so if you were over here when that happened, how could you see what was over here? Well, I was so-and-so. But no, wait a minute. A while ago you said that you saw, and this thing just becomes a big confusion in your mind. After all, you hardly have the facts straight as to who was where, who did what. And this thing can go on, and the child clearly is getting the story confused. Now, are they responsible for that? Well, see, you don't really know, do you? We would like to think they're very responsible for it, of course. I mean, you're lying, trying to get out of it. But there are students, especially younger students, especially students who are challenged with even just overall understanding the directions, and I think you understand what kind of student I'm talking about, who I'm afraid, either intentionally or unintentionally, confuse their own mind. And so be careful that we get focused on what is going on here, rather than just ask endless questions that end up confusing the story, and then you're not really sure what to do with it. They're confused, you're possibly confused, and now to bring discipline seems unfair because they got that puzzled look on their face. Now, some students are very, very good at that, granted, annoyingly so, and you're sure they're very intelligent, but they can just get that puzzled look. Oh, boy, he comes, why is this boy coming to my mind? This isn't good. Yes, an amazing ability to just that look of, well, I don't get it. I don't get it. Well, you're going to get it. I'm going to help you to get it. Just a certain sense of, well, I don't really know what you mean. And so you try to explain it again, and you try to explain. You know, you're probably wasting your time. There are times that a student like that needs to be told that, well, maybe you don't understand, but these consequences will help you understand that what happened is really not okay. You're not going to talk like that to another student. That is wrong. All right, let's move on to profitable questions. Questions that carefully call attention to God's all-seeing eye. So some of this is coming back to things we've talked about before, but from a different spin, cushioning these questions. Is it okay to say to a first grader, do you think God saw what happened? What do you think? See how hard questions are to answer? Yes. Is there a line here from calling attention to the fact that God is in our school, God cares about what goes on here, and leaving it at that with an encouragement to please God versus moving this into, now God was probably frowning, wasn't he? Now, do you want to make God happy? Mm-hmm. Well, did that make God happy? No. And we just kind of lead that thing along. Again, we're gathering weight on this child that shouldn't be on their shoulders. I would personally feel comfortable with saying to a young child, do you think God always watches our life? I mean, you got to do this with a smile, not a scowl. I mean, this has a lot to do with how you say things, doesn't it? Do you think God is watching our school? Yes. Aren't there certain things we can do that really pleases God, right? Yes. So if you would have, instead of done that, if you would have told the truth, that would have really pleased God, wouldn't it? Uh-huh. Okay, so remember that. God's always watching us. God loves us and wants us to please him. You can leave it at that. You're putting the positive on it, not the negative, that God wasn't happy this time, was he? We don't have to take it that far. We can stop there and say, you know, God would be pleased if he sees your attitude is always good when we get to this class. God's watching how we feel, and it would please God if we get to class and God notices, God sees that you have a good attitude and you're paying attention and you're trying to do your reasonable best. You're stopping before you're putting that frown. And as you move older, there is a place to show that God is displeased with this action because they are accountable before God. I've really struggled with that with older students as we think about their accountability to God. I can think of one student I work with that was a Christian, but was not an honest person, or said he was a Christian. It was hard to know what questions to ask him. I asked him, so he's 16. You're a Christian, aren't you? Yeah. But are you telling me you're not honest? No, I'm not. Are you honest at home? No. So you deceive your parents a lot? Mm-hmm. You need to really think about this, don't you? I mean, God, a Christian being dishonest, I mean, this isn't really okay, is it? No. And just to help them think about that, you got to decide where to stop. You're not the preacher, you're not the parents. And I feel pretty strongly about how far you want to take a child in those type of discussions, because you can soon violate who you are as a teacher. You need to be so careful. I think there is a place to try to disciple. There's opportunity to do that at times, but watch that you don't take that too far, even with an older student. So we do want to call attention to God's all-seeing eye, but we want to be very age-sensitive and personality-sensitive and emotional-sensitive to what can this child handle and at what point are we crossing lines that really simply is not the time and place for it. Number two, questions that focus on the facts of what happened. So I would like to just think about this a little bit from the why, comparing this why to what. Even the what questions, be careful with if you know it's going to always lead to an untruth. But we are focusing now on the facts of what happened, and we're starting there. See, rather than start with a why question and finally trickle this down after it got clouded and muddled in the issue, and you're confused, they're confused, and they made a ton of excuses, and they're trying to get out, and now we're finally trying to get back to what did happen. I think we ought to try to reverse this now. The focus is on what happened. I believe it is okay to ask a child what happened because it teaches them personal responsibility for what they did. Not trying to water this down with why they did it, and then we finally get down to the what, but it's so confused because they made so many excuses and they've forgotten, you're not sure if they're accountable anymore. But if we start with what did they do and teach them they're responsible for that, then we can maybe lead into, well, what was really going on in your heart when you did this? But we got it nailed down, what was done. And they took ownership of what happened, which is extremely, I think, important to do. But again, maybe it's a question that you need to tell them what they did rather than ask them. I don't know what to say about that. I remember working with a situation one time where a child did lie pretty quickly. And the parents were very, very supportive. But they did ask the question. They said, you know, what about these questions of what they did? And it just sets up for the next lie. That's something you want to think about. Okay, is it good for children to take, to be honest, et cetera? Obviously so, but is it your job to make sure that they're honest every time? I think there are children who habitually lie. Maybe the home is weak on this. Maybe the home is working on it, but it's a special case where you know that to ask, what did you do? Were you running? No. Well, you saw them running. So tell them what they did. You were running down here. What's the rule? So now you're asking what the rule is. What did you do? But you took away the opportunity to start out the conversation with a lie, and now the problem got 10 times bigger, just like that. Is there ever a place to ask them why? Yes. Or what they did, particularly what they did? Yes. But if you know it's a notorious liar, somebody who lies, avoid the problem. I mean, we want to focus on what happened here, not try to use this opportunity to see if we can also deal with other issues you know the child has. And again, the problem soon explodes. Can you always avoid the child line? Well, certainly not. But sometimes I think we can lead away from that rather than toward that. So the question of what did you do or else just tell them, I think is important. And try to avoid setups. Help the child then understand that they are responsible for that by asking, what are the rules? So what did you do? Or else tell them what they did. What is the rule? And then we can move on to, what are we going to do about the problem? So we got there quickly, rather than a lot of other issues now to deal with. We help them understand what they did. Take accountability for it. And now what are we going to do about this violation? Now at that point they might lie. Well, I forgot. Okay, but at least you didn't ask for the lie, did you? It's a little difficult when you call the parent to work through this lie. And, you know, this was really a trivial thing. All they did was jump 3 steps down the stairs. That's all they did. And now you're calling the parent about a lie and you don't know what to do about it. Well, how did you get into this lie? Well, ask them what they did or ask them why. You know, well, we created the bigger situation again rather than just kind of focusing. Again, there's children who will make the lie even though you never asked for it, even though you never set the trap. You got to deal with it at that point. Now that you focused on that, on what happened, now I believe we can go back to showing the heart as to what is going on. We had some issues last year with older students on some sports issues and how to play volleyball, and very intense players and pretty good players. And I always wanted to set up with a certain girl right beside them that could spike, or they could set the ball at the best that they could spike. And, you know, and I just really grappled with allowing that set up day after day after day. And, you know, if you're cool and good, you always were by the cool guys. And if you weren't, you always got stuck in the back. Of course, you eventually got rotated, but you knew how the setup would be right away. I just didn't like that intensity. And so I allowed a boy just to talk. And I was smiling inside. You know, it's my last year in school, and my last year with a couple of my friends in school, and we went good volleyball games. And you know, so it just feels like, you know, we're just last couple of weeks of school, and I wish we could just kind of let it like this. And kind of went off about it. And just sat there, quite walking into this thing. He was a Christian, and a fine Christian. I mean, he's a sincere boy. But he was, this volleyball took over. And so just to be able to ask him at the end, say, so what are you really telling me? What is this? Is this issue all about you? Or is this all about others? I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean. A question sometimes just is so obvious if they walked into it. And it's better to ask the question because you are showing them their heart rather than telling. And especially as they get older. If he'd have walked into my office and I said, you know what, I think this is really selfish of you. I can't believe that here you are, 16, a Christian, and you are so selfish you think it always has to be your way. You always got to do it this way. You know, right away the guards go up. Quit telling me this. I mean, do you like to be told you're selfish? Of course not. That is a judgmental statement. That's not telling them what they did. That's telling them why they're doing it. Be careful with that. Way better to ask questions, especially when you're not even sure about them. We'll look at that in a minute. But here where it's obvious, and the student says what happened, now we're not asking really why they are doing this, but we're asking what is motivating this? So we do want to lead to the question, but you want to be in control of the question. You want to be in control of when and how you get to the why question. And it's toward the end. After the child maybe has been a little set back by, I did violate this, I did say this, I did do this, I do have this attitude. Now we can go into the question of, so what is going on in your heart when you do this? What feelings are going on? I mean, is this a positive thing or is this a negative? Is this sort of all about me? And the answer is so obvious. I mean, what student's going to turn around and say, oh, it's all about the team? Yeah. Well, of course it isn't. It's, you know, it's obvious. The discussion has led us there. And then show the heart of the child, which is so important. Show the heart. That's the prong that must be there. That's the second part of the discipline that must happen if you're really going to work through, especially big, difficult issues. Show the heart. Have the child understand, yes, this was really a selfish thing for me to do. They acknowledge their behavior. They understand what was wrong. Does that mean you can force the heart to change back to the goals of discipline? Can you force that heart? You cannot. But you can at least do everything you can to show the child what they did wrong, why it was wrong from the heart level, and then hope that they respond positively to that. But I think that's your best shot at it versus that preaching and that telling. It's to allow them to come to some of their own conclusions. Let's move on to the last point. Questions that resolve the issue and store relationships. Let's see, I do want to stop with something here because I wanted to just slide something in here. And that is the importance of asking questions, what happened under this what issue, when you don't know. I cannot tell you how often. I'm a suspicious kind of person. I taught long enough, I guess, that one. And especially if it's a wrong student. You know, you're just sure they were up to no good. And I hope I'm learning my lesson to ask what happened if you don't know, then putting a judgment on it. I cannot believe how many times it was a big student. It was something small. And you just saw this here. I don't know what happened. Just asking you. Oh, I was just, whatever. Okay, it's fine. Thank you. That's why I ask. I like to say that at the end. That's why I ask. Because I wasn't sure. You know, it tells them that you are alert. And you see when they did something unusual. I mean, what the world? They went up to the attic. They're not supposed to go up to the attic. Hey, why did you go up to the attic? You didn't have permission from me. Oh, well, one of the other teachers said we're out of paper towels, and she said I can go up and check. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. Well, they see, then you're embarrassed. I can remember one time I discovered some chips up in the attic in a desk. Maybe some of you heard me say this before. Boy, did I have a case. I mean, they go up to the attic for their jobs. And I could just imagine a party up there. I mean, guys are hanging out in the attic, a little light on, smiling and eating chips out of the desk because we have extra desk up there, storage. For some reason, I open up chips. Oh, boy. And this would have been some people who I could imagine the scenario. I spun a story very quickly. Boy, was I ever glad that I didn't come down on those boys and start out with some penalties or start out with, what's going on here? Why are you acting like this? I can't believe you're so childish. And okay, they had some chips up there. They shouldn't have had chips up there. But, you know, it really wasn't a big deal. It had just been there a day or two, and somebody had some extra ones from a snack we had as a class, and they stuffed them up there. And so you're kind of hanging out up here eating these chips, you know? We grabbed a few chips, and we thought it was kind of funny to have a bag of chips up here. All right, well, you know, I probably don't want chips in the attic, right? Oh, yeah. It's fine. It all kind of went away. Okay, they knew I saw the chips. They knew I always had the courage to come and ask them. But boy, what an embarrassing thing that would have been to have kind of the whole thing laid out. What they're going to do, here's the consequences. You can't do jobs for 3 weeks. And boy, no eating chips. I mean, just kind of lay this thing down. And then realize, oh, all they did is ate a few chips. Well, you know, I like to eat chips too. I mean, big deal. Okay, ask, what's going on here? Because we teachers are pretty good at spinning a story of what we're sure. And it's usually pretty bad. And often they just aren't as bad as what we thought they were. So they get an opportunity. You show some trust too. You know, tell me what happened. Okay, I'm glad I asked. It just, something didn't seem quite right. You understand why? Yeah, I see why. You're okay with that? That's not distrust. But depending on how you come across with the thing laid out, kind of, it shows a huge amount of distrust. Give them the opportunity to say what happened, especially if it's an older child, and they have the honesty to tell you what happened, and hopefully all the students can do that, even though they tend to make it, watered down a little bit. Hopefully at least the basic story is true. Number three now. Questions that resolve the issue and restores relationship. I think it is good to go ahead and ask the student at the end of a scenario, say, so what do you think we need to do to take care of this problem? You know, it is amazing how strict students are on themselves. I'm amazed with that many, many times. When it's all said and done, and they're contrite now, they got their consequence, it's all kind of over. And you say to a student, all right, what do you think we should do now to clear this up? This depends. This would be primarily if it affects somebody else. And, well, I think I probably should apologize to the class for having talked like that about you. Or I think I should apologize for whatever it was to a certain person. That's a great idea. Wouldn't that just kind of clear the air? Yeah, I think so. So, do you want me to help you write this little note, or do you want to write it? I'll just write it. Okay, why don't you write it, show it to me, I'm sure it'll be good, and then we'll get it to that student, and I'll just kind of clear everything up. Is everything okay now? Yeah, it's all okay. And you just help them to think through. What is it going to take to make me feel clear and clean and I can move on? You don't want something hanging on that child. It's mine, because they will. Some children especially will kind of carry that guilt with them. It's not just really cleared up. What can we do to clear this thing up? It may even be that you ask them what needs to happen in relation to what they did wrong. But I would be really careful with that. You probably want to be in control of that. Now, be careful. Sometimes I think teachers maybe say, well, what do you think we should do about this? And this has to do with the consequences of what they did, not how to make an apology out there somewhere. You understand the difference? You don't have a child who did some pretty serious thing. You say, now, what do you think we should do? I think maybe stand 5 minutes for recess. And you're thinking, 5 weeks? Like, 5 minutes? Okay, that's not really, that's your decision. Or maybe sometimes you give a choice, but I would say very rarely. Come on, you're the teacher. You got to decide what are the consequences to what happened. But as far as how to restore a relationship with somebody else, and I'll just throw this in here, and this is maybe just outside of asking them a question. But I think it's important that you allow the student to restore trust quickly. I've done this to older students. I've already said, so what do you think this does to me in my trust of you? That is a fair question to an older student, even maybe middle grades. I mean, they really violated trust. I mean, come on. This was absolutely unacceptable. To say to that student, so what do you think this does to my trust of you? Now, again, if they're smart aleck, don't ask them that kind of a question. This is obviously once you got beyond, they're contrite, that they're feeling bad. And you're clearly in control of the discussion, and they're not going to say something stupid. Just simply say, what do you think this does? And they will probably say, well, it probably makes you not trust me. You're right. It does affect my trust for you. But you know what? It would be unfair of me to not allow you to rebuild that trust. How do you think you can rebuild the trust now? Because I'm going to give you an opportunity to rebuild trust very quickly. So what can you do now to rebuild trust? I can make sure I always whatever. Good idea. I'm going to be looking for that. Are you willing to do that? I am. See, now they're probably in a position they're going to say about what you want them to say. And hopefully they want to. But it's giving the child the opportunity to engage in this fix-up, getting things back to where they should be. They're part of the discussion. They're acknowledging that trust has been broken. But you're saying, I don't want to be a teacher for the next 3 weeks. I'm going to try to catch you. You know what? I believe you're sincere. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes. This time you made the mistake. We took care of it. I'm going to allow you to build trust again very quickly. So what can you do it? They contribute to that discussion, and you can say, I'm going to be looking for that. And you know what? You can build trust quickly. Again, I assure you that. You must be a teacher that allows trust to be restored. Teachers can really hold out on that one. And the child can feel, I can never quite get back up to an honorable position before my teacher, because it's always just kind of, and sometimes students ask for that. I realize they don't come around. But when a child comes around and they are sorry and they do want to build trust, make it easy for that trust. Even tell them later. Catch them a day later. Say, you're building trust quickly. Great. All right. Thanks for the improvement. Wow, I noticed that. Drop a note in their lunch. I can remember doing that to a big boy. It meant a lot to him. In fact, the parents saw the note at home then. I think he left it in his lunch. You know, just thanks for the good day. I really appreciate the efforts to make the adjustments I'm asking. Those little things. Students need to hear the positive that they're doing, not just the negative, the negative, the negative. Oh, my ratio needs to change on that one as far as kind of reminders to change things versus the affirmative. Are there any questions you want to ask? It's time to close. Good question. A hard question. Students who are overly sensitive, maybe they are the ones that are asking the questions. What should I do about this? I didn't do this as neat as I should. Should I erase this? Whew. Oh my. You know, those are almost more difficult cases. Do you have a particular type of situation? Now you're asking a hard question, because every situation is so different. But I appreciate your sensitivity to that, because there are students who need a lot of affirmation that you need to initiate the affirmation. Even going to that student and saying, I know this has taken you a while to do, and I know you really want to do it so right, but you know what? What you're doing is nice and good. It's good enough. You know, you could move a little faster. Just go ahead. It's okay. You're taking the initiative to kind of come to that student and say, try to lift that burden a little bit from them. Or maybe they come and say, oh, I did this wrong. Well, I don't think you wanted to hurt their feelings. Should I apologize? Should I apologize? We had a situation we finally had to tell the student, young student, you may not apologize. A strange thing to say. But this happened over and over. I don't think I held the door long enough. Should I apologize for them? Or when I walked out, you just can't apologize. And you know what? That relieved the child immensely. Because now the teacher said, I don't have to apologize. If they can trust the teacher enough that they just kind of lifted the burden. A rare case indeed. But those are extremely difficult cases to work with. And because you're shaping what they think about, you know, what's right, what's wrong, when do I take care of things, when I don't. Very, very hard situation. I understand. Yes. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And that took a burden off of you, you're saying, for the teacher to make the initiative, being understanding, and you were able to accept that if he said it's okay, then it is okay, rather than that burden being on you to try to always decipher those questions. Very good. One last thing I did have on my notes, and that is simply be careful you don't ask questions that are outside of your scope. Oh, boy. One of the teachers just mentioned a situation yesterday as we were talking about a student who came to school and said, "Mom and Dad had a fight." You better stop right there. You better change the subject as fast as you can. We've run into situations similar to that. A student saying something about the home that is very troubling. Now, you can do something with that question, but not with that child. You can do something with that situation. You maybe have to call the ministry and say, "You know, I don't know what's true here. It's just what the child said. I'm going to let it in your hands." But don't ask questions outside of your scope. It can be so tempting to do, "Oh, really? What happened?" Stop. "How did that make you feel?" "Well, not very good." Stop. Stop. I mean, you want to give them a hug. You want to heal the problem. But I'll tell you what, there's questions you just don't ask. It's out of your scope of responsibility. It's out of your scope of authority. And if you do that, you will have a situation that is bigger yet. So in the whole discipline thing, there are times that things come up that are outside of school that are so tempting to ask, but you want to be extremely careful with not crossing those lines, or you're going to have to deal with that. And God bless your school year. You're excused.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.